Let's do this.
What is virtualization?
You're going to learn today.
Innovate like a startup. Deliver like an enterprise.
I hope you're coffeed up and ready because it's going to be a great day.
I know you're going to dig this.
Oh, yeah.
You're listening to the Virtually Speaking Podcast with Pedro Aero and John Nicholson.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Virtually Speaking Podcast, episode number 173. My name is Pete Fletcher, a.k.a. Pedro Aero, and joining me once again is Mr. John Nicholson. John, VMworld's over, man. How you feeling? Are you recovering yet?
Dude, it's just been, you know, nonstop sessions and then all the running. I mean, it was on a treadmill, but, you know, I decided to go all kid on it and just be, you know, running for some reason while talking the whole time.
Yeah. Same, man. I'm so exhausted from drinking so much sangria and eating all these tapas and all that I decided to really, you know, get into the mood of VMworld now I'm paying the price. But hey, man, I'm sad that VMworld's over. That was fun. It was a great event. However, this is a great week because there's a lot more announcements coming. There are other events. There are other things to talk about. And one of the things that we talked about, let me look at my date here. This is back in January of 2019. We actually had our good friend William Lamb on, as well as Andre Workington, and we talked about ESXi on ARM. I'm sure you remember that.
Yeah, I do. And that also reminded me of an interview we had with Pat, where I asked him why ARM, which was a fun question.
Oh, yeah, probably one of my favorite quotes of the year, yeah. But yeah, he was great. Great announcement on ARM, all that good stuff. But these gentlemen are coming back to give us the updates, man. So why don't we start by welcoming William. William, welcome back to the podcast.
Hey, guys. How's it going? Thanks for having me again.
Yeah, man. How you feeling?
Good. That was a rough VMworld. I feel like that's one of the hardest VMworlds we've had in a while. All that walking around, meeting customers and all that.
Yeah. All that virtual walking around. I get you. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
But Andre, it's been a while since we've talked on the podcast. So officially, welcome back to the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So I don't even know how to start on this. There's been so much going on as it pertains to ARM internally. Like, it seems like we never know what we can talk about and what we can't talk about. There's been a lot going on behind the scenes. So why don't we start with the basics? Like, what was announced this week or even actually today?
Okay. Well, so maybe before we can go into what was announced today, you know, VMworld, you know, we all remember the huge, you know, Project Monterey announcement. And I'm sure you've all, you know, you've already read up on it, you know, you watch the tech sessions, but I'll just briefly mention that, you know, it is actually a major validation point for the technical development for ESXi on ARM, because we know that certainly some of the SmartNICs part of Project Monterey are actually based on ARM technologies and those inherently, you know, do use the ESXi ARM code base. So that was pretty huge. I've been very excited. It's been a long time in the making. It still is an exciting project. We hope to amaze you all in the future with more cool things around that. But this week, the ARM team is actually attending a very special event. It is the ARM Dev Summit. And it's actually a rebranding of the ARM TechCon with a slightly different twist on it. But this is ARM's own premier customer event. It's positioned at software and hardware engineers. You know, that's the primary audience, of course, for ARM as a company that licenses IP and chip technology. But VMware is actually a gold sponsor this year. We have an expo booth where we're demonstrating a bunch of VMware and ARM technologies. Now, of course, not only we're talking about Project Monterey, but that was a very exciting announcement this morning around the ESXi on ARM Fling. So this is actually an absolutely massive thing, right? What is a fling? What is a fling, Pete?
What is a fling? A fling is when two people... No, I'm kidding. A VMware fling, I think that's what you're referring to, is this is a place where you can go. It's a, what is it, flings.vmware.com? And you can find a whole bunch of apps, like the engineers submit them, even community as well work on these. And you can download them, you can try them, you can even submit bugs for them if there's something wrong. Essentially, you work on these flings that are not technically VMware products, and hopefully one day, if they're good and popular and cleaned up, then they ultimately do become VMware products. William, you've had a couple of flings, right?
I've had a couple out there. Probably like three or four. I've lost track, to be honest.
I love to see a good fling actually become part of the product.
Yeah, promotion's always really nice. Yeah.
Oh yeah, and it's one of the really cool parts of the program is that, you know, I think it's probably been around for almost a decade, maybe, and it's really a cool way for engineering to get ideas out there, right? And sometimes it's just experiment with some ideas. Some of it is just a quick solution that somebody had solved the problem and want to make widely available. But if we're very lucky, you know, these projects themselves kind of grow into potentially getting productized, integrated in there. And so we really listen to our customers. And I've been very fortunate to work with a number of engineers to work release different parts of the Flings. And it really is driven by customer and their feedback. And we kind of iterate on it in a very open manner compared to our traditional development where you really don't see it. And then you give feedback and after the fact. So I really like the Flings program overall from the Office of CTO.
Yeah, it's like you get free feedback, you know, without having to spend all of these massive dev resources into guessing what people want. You can get all of that done in advance and actually have people will for free give you the feedback that you need. And then before you know it, you got a great product.
And so I'll tell you that the Fling of ESXi on ARM is actually a huge milestone I would consider for the Fling program, because I don't think we've ever flung an entire operating system or entire hypervisor yet, right? And you can imagine just some of the challenges getting to do that, because it was anything but a normal Fling, as William will certainly confirm.
Well, you've got like driver code in there that you're going to have to get third-party clearances for. Like this isn't already 100% our code.
Yeah, but for example, you know, we can't release things that kind of are ahead of the product cycle, right? So that's one of the reasons why the ESXi on ARM Fling, for example, is based on exactly the 7.0 release. You know, it's not 7.1 or 7.2 or 8 or 9. And is very careful about making sure that we don't sort of like leak out next greatest developments that are happening in that. So the ESXi on ARM Fling, right? Why are we doing this? Well, kind of the same reason why people do Flings. We want to put it out there. We want to basically find out how people want to use it. What are their use cases, right? So this is exactly about driving product development. And, it's about, we're actually positioning the Fling as a way to explore several use cases. One of these is the edge compute use case. And we can go into that as to why now and why not before. So this is like both IoT gateways, kind of far edge industrial applications. But we're also, and there's a few platforms that we're supporting with ESXi and our Fling, but we're also want to explore if customers have an interest in traditional server use cases. So we actually are supporting an ARM server as part of the ESXi and ARM Fling.
Nice. William, what are some of the use cases you've been testing with prior to this Fling being released?
There's so many opportunities. I think Andre covered some of the classical use cases. I think the ones when I look at it from a kind of traditional VI admin standpoint is lightweight vServe-based environments, right? You can imagine you can now have something that just sits literally in your pocket. We've got Photon OS as an operating system. There's actually a number of operating systems that we've tested that are validated as an ARM guest OS. And so you can think about Photon OS running on these lightweight VMs, installing something like PowerCLI. There's a PowerShell Core ARM edition. So thinking about kind of admins who are saying, hey, I want to be able to, you know, when we can actually go back and travel and you need to go do an engagement, you can pull this, Raspberry Pi out running ESXi ARM there. You have a lightweight Photon OS VM that has PowerCLI, and now you can start to interact with a customer's environment without needing your laptop necessarily.
Yeah.
So I think that's a pretty interesting one for development purposes. If we take a step back and look at home lab environments, you know, cooling, costing is always an aspect. And so now when you think about home labs, there's this whole new set of potential use cases from there. You can imagine some folks buying a couple of Nooks and using the ARM Pi as a client. Maybe your full home lab is now 100% as a ESXi ARM host, and you can actually start to replace your traditional x86 systems for some of the development purposes, for scripting, for automation. The cool thing is it's not just ESXi. We can actually attach this to a vCenter server. So now you can start to think about some really cool use cases and a lot of basic features like vSphere, vServe vMotion, FT, HA. I've even tinkered with running this as a vSAN witness, which I know a lot of people have been asking about.
Oh, yeah.
And it works. So I think that's really exciting.
Wow.
Yes.
There's going to be the amount of times I've had people ask me, can I run a witness on a Raspberry Pi? There's going to be a large thundering horde outside the PM's office demanding that get productized.
Yeah, don't in production, but it definitely does work. But I think it is interesting to take a step back a little bit and start to explore kind of why now, because Andre kind of alluded to it. It's like, why now, right? We kind of show this off at VMworld, and I think a lot of people are just like, well, it's ready, I should be able to use it.
Yeah,
but there's more details behind that. And I think it's really interesting to take a step back and look at the history behind it. And I think Andre can share some of those insights, because he's really been at the forefront of leading some of these efforts, both internally as well as externally with our partners.
Well, let me rephrase that, because you say why now, and I think on behalf of angry guy number 37 on Reddit, on the VMware subreddit, I have to ask, why not a year ago? Like, I mean, this is something people have been asking. What have been some of the obstacles, I guess, here?
Okay, no, that's actually a great topic, and trust me, this is good. It plugs into another important announcement that actually happened yesterday, that are made at their conference. But by the way, just silly use case from my side. You know, this $75 device, of course, isn't just, you know, ESXi in your pocket. It's also the easiest way to pull data from a VMFS disk, you know, because guess what? You don't need a big server anymore, you know, to do that. You know, just plug it in and you can copy, you know, VMs or whatever away from it. Okay, so why now? One of the year ago, you know, people asked me this question last year. People asked me this question 2 years ago. I was like, yeah. Andre, this is great. Can you give us the bits? And I said, well, no, not really, not yet. And I'm sure folks, you know, are wondering why. Now, if you remember, in 2018, we talked about this edge compute use case, right? We positioned it. We talked about why this is the next frontier, you know, of extending basically cloud services out to the edge, the planet as a data center, you know, solving operational challenges mostly. And it's all made sense. I mean, we actually said that this is a place where you're going to see both x86 and ARM-based tech. And there's many reasons why ARM, and we talked about that. But, was there any meaningful hardware yet that folks could go use to evaluate this? And the short answer to that is, well, not really. So if you looked at where ESXi ARM was 2 years ago, or where ESXi ARM was even a year ago, what we didn't have is a good launch vehicle for a tech preview. So, you know, me telling you to go buy a $5,000 server that you have to email some guy to get a quote on sends a really bad message, sure, obviously. And then, like, but if you care about the edge use cases, why is Andre telling me to buy, you know, a 32-core data center server? That makes no sense, right? So, like, if you're a little schizophrenic, we don't want to do that. Okay. And so what have we been up to over the last, you know, few years? Now, very important announcement from ARM. ARM has just launched the system-ready set of standards. Now, system-ready is actually builds on the server-ready standards. And the server-ready standards, we've talked about it, I think, a bit ago in episode 102. These were the things that actually made ESXi ARM possible, because they basically said that ARM servers are going to look exactly like x86 servers from the way like they're built up in hardware, how they're presented by firmware. So an operating system vendor like VMware or like Microsoft could actually distribute a single ISO image, and this would run on a number of machines. Now, clearly, mm-hmm. you might need drivers, but, you know, it's a very different thing, a different problem, right? You know, you either need to load a driver or write one, or you just don't know how to boot. Okay, so with servers, that was server ready, and you know, this is generally a solved problem. But then with edge and other non-server footprints, it's not a solved problem. So this is a very exciting system ready. Basically, generalizes the specifications, and now there's different addendums or footprints to it. So system ready SR is the old server ready spec. Basically, it's right. It's the same system ready stuff as it was in, as server ready on servers. Now, system ready ES is basically the embedded server or the edge server standards, and it's also using UEFI and ACPI technology.
Okay.
Did you know that the Raspberry Pi is the first system ready ES certified platform in the world?
Oh, nice.
And in fact, you know, and I had to.
And who was driving that?
And I had to clarify this to make sure that I'm actually capable of making the statement. Because, you know, I'm not really on an ego trip, and I don't want to like offend anybody. But I asked my ARM folks and said, look, you know, the system ready stuff, right? I'm pretty sure it wouldn't exist if like a year ago at the ARM partner meeting, you know, I didn't approach you execs and said, look, we should try and see if we can make the Raspberry Pi server ready, because the hardware is almost there. And he's like, yeah, Andre, you know, you're spot on. The system ready stuff is totally grew out of that. So this is actually VMware driving industry standards, not by itself, you know, with ARM, With other OS vendors and other.
I've seen some BSD and some other announcements come out of, hey, yeah, like you don't have to be this highly, you know, kind of customized fork in order to run on the Pi. And it looks like that's been falling out of this.
So this is actually an amazing contribution by our company. It's effectively a gift, you could say, to the world. I mean, okay, that sounds a little pretentious, but nevertheless, for example, we actually started the UEFI Raspberry Pi firmware. And this is an open community project. So if a bus hits me, you know, it's still going to be done. It's still going to be used. And you can actually use this today to boot ESXi, to boot Windows, NetBSD, OpenBSD, Linux. It's pretty amazing.
That's incredible. And for the record, I hope you don't get hit by a bus.
No, I really hope I don't get hit by a bus either. But so this is one of the platforms we launched on, right? So this is actually now officially certified as system ready. Yes.
Which Raspberry Pis, though? What is the minimum?
Okay, so Raspberry Pi 4, sorry, okay, folks, the Raspberry Pi 3.
Which memory config?
Not be certified system ready, yes. And it was worse, doesn't have enough RAM, right? So, Raspberry Pi 3 is only a gig of RAM. Now, the Pi 4 also comes in the 1 gig and 2 gig variety. And if you bought those, I'm really sorry. You're going to have to go and spend a bit more and buy the 4 gig or the 8 gig. Okay. Now, you can run the 4 gig. I highly recommend you don't, because nevertheless, you know, the 8 gig, you're going to be able to do more interesting things with it.
That's fair.
But you know what? We support the native networking port. And actually, this is another place where ARM and VMware collaborated, and we jointly developed a network driver for the 1 gig port. You know, obviously, we support the USB ports on this thing. And you can use a USB NIC. And actually, the expectation is you're going to be using a USB storage to install the system. So, you know, don't cheap out and get a cheap drive. Get a good one. Get in like an M2 enclosure. You can use iSCSI. So if you're like building a giant fridge size.
I'm not booting from iSCSI. That is a battle I have fought and lost many a time. Pixie, I might actually get behind, but not boot from one.
Well, but you can do it. You can iSCSI. You can Pixie. You can HTTP boot. So if you folks want to build like a giant cluster of Raspberry Pis, you know, this is the way to do it. You could do it. We don't support the SD card. Honestly, it's only used to store the firmware for this thing. But there you go. The Raspberry Pi. $75 and you got ESXi in your pocket.
So well, I'll be looking forward to William's blog with the bomb of exactly what I need. And I'm also, I'm excited to hear about that NIC being supported, because I know, you know, having seen your lab over the past several years, sometimes you end up with these crazy hydras of stuff like soldered on or some of the stuff people have done just to try to work around the limitations of lack of drivers and support. And I mean, I know people have been like, you know, again, Angry Guy 37 on Reddit's been saying why it wasn't the ship 2 years ago, but it's good to see that there's actual end to end, like stuff's actually going to work end to end. And this isn't just like, oh yeah, you can do this, but you need a special, you're gonna have to solder your own NIC on or things like that.
Well, so the thing is, yeah, everybody can buy a Raspberry Pi. And you know, like one thing I've seen is like people launch some random board and like, that's great. You know, will the company still be around in a year or two, or like, will the volume like dry up in like 3 months and you can't buy it anymore? The one thing I have to say is like, if you're going to like launch the ESXi on ARM Fling on any platform, pretty much have to launch it in the Raspberry Pi. And yeah. I'm just excited that the way that we could do it is a way where everybody profits, literally everybody profits, because now you have this amazing set of specifications that are a blueprint for building not just the next Raspberry Pi, but also other systems. For example, we have also worked with NXP. You know, NXP is an ARM licensee. They're pretty big in the telco space, networking, and also IoT and embedded. But they have some pretty powerful ARM-based processors. So there's actually two more systems on that, you know, quote unquote, supported list. And I'm using air quotes on supported because Fling's inherently not supported, but I do have to distinguish between hardware I actually want you to try versus you trying it to run on a toaster.
Oh, so there are going to be some beefy options besides the RAS. There is going to be something beefy besides the Pi that we can throw this Fling on.
That's right. And not only, again, it's very important that the platforms that we position for the Fling are platforms that like are not vaporware. They exist. You can buy them, right? And you can buy them anywhere. Right. And the four platforms that we're leading right now with on this Fling, they're exactly like that. You know, I don't really want to like, for example, we have a blog, the official VMware ARM blog, that's blogs.vmware.com/ARM. And you know what? I promise I will put up like articles. So if you have an older ARM server or something that you can try it out. Yeah, sure. But you know, that's completely unsupported. I'm doing it just in case somebody has hardware out there. But if you're trying out new,
if there's some on eBay cheap, people will buy them. Don't worry.
Sure. But the importance is that this is not a one-off. It's not as if like, well, you know, we waste a bunch of time and we support the Raspberry Pi. No, I think this is the beginning of something beautiful. You're going to see more and more ARM hardware that ESXi on ARM could run on.
Yeah. And I think if you go back to, you know, I think Andre kind of quickly glossed over. He's like, hey, this is all this awesome stuff. But I think to his credit and to the overall team is that you can see the amount of effort that's been put in. It's not just booting ESXi and booting a VM, right? You know, getting the UEFI standard, that was all done in an open source manner. We contributed code, you know, just like any other open source project to get that movement going. As the hardware was getting adopted, you know, and getting released, I mean, in fact, as part of these last few years, we had the 4 gig model, we had the 8 gig model. These were unexpected, actually. And so the ecosystem was also starting to build up around it. And as we started to do this development, one of the things I was aware of is because I've done the USB Fling, you know, ESXi was never designed to run all these different devices off of USB.
Sure.
And so when we start to look at this Raspberry Pi and say, oh, yeah, well, how do we handle storage? You know, Andre, nights and weekends, I remember seeing updates from on Slack. It's like, oh, man, there's all these things that just wasn't possible. And so their code changes need to be in there so that now USB for storage on ESXi is much more friendly than it is. And this benefit actually is going to open itself even across to the x86 platform, right? Same thing with the onboard NIC. This is a completely different NIC device than what we normally see. And so there's been all this development to make sure that all the components not only work and install and are visible, we took it up to another level where this is actually works with a standard vCenter server so that all the vCenter features or majority of them will work. I mean, to give you one good example, the HA client. We don't even think about it, right? You turn on HA, I'm sure Duncan's like, yeah, you got to turn it on HA,
right.
And it configures it and protects your VM. Well, in this ARM world, when we ship vCenter, it's an x86 platform. vCenter pushes down this FDM client. Well, guess what? There is no ARM FDM client. And I'm pretty sure it's going to be hard for us to convince the vCenter team, like, hey, do you mind bundling this unsupported client in there? So we have to figure out how to compile that. And then what we learned is like, well, FDM is tied to vCenter. So now you have to have a very specific version, get that installed on the client. So there are all these little things that we've been, you know, taking our time to make sure that we have those pieces working together so that customers not only get a working host, but you also have all the supporting capabilities that they've all relied on.
Yeah, it seems like you probably had to work pretty closely with the ARM organization as well as VMware engineering. That seems like you guys are like right in the middle of that.
And I would say just to follow up on what William said, not only has this been interesting all across the stack, you know, discoveries and engineering that isn't necessarily even ARM specific and isn't even really even hardware like driver specific, but some of it is about really making our hypervisor the best hypervisor out there, right? And improving it. And there's been a lot of parallels, you know, you're well aware of, William Lam's, the USB Fling, you know, that he's doing, you know, with Songtao Zhang. And, you know, it's funny how, you know, it kind of in parallel, we're kind of improving different parts of that. And, you know, I'm eager to know that at some point, you know, I don't know when, but all this stuff will actually fold up, even on the x86 side into some vSphere release. And it's going to be amazing. But to the point, by the way, of, you know, of all these moving parts, yes, you know, there's work that is like, how does ESXi run on ARM CPUs, you know, ARM VMs? But then like, okay, I need the drivers. Like, but like, okay, but I can't boot because, you know, the hardware's weird. Okay, so I had to go work with the CPU manufacturer and then work with the company they do for firmware and then go to talk to the OEM server, you know, ODM integrator.
Yeah.
And then you realize that, well, you know, there's actually missing standards here. So let's kind of abstract a way up, you know, and take a detour and go figure that out, right? And so, yeah, it's quite a bit. And unfortunately, it takes time, right? So like, again, you know, that was a couple of years of time. And I really wish that, you know, all those ducks were lined up in a row years ago, but they're not. And it just so happens that, you know, we were instrumental to helping the entire world get there. That's fine. Another outcome, inherently all this work, is within Project Monterey. And, you know, as we know, Project Monterey, you know, does involve some ARM-based SmartNICs. And, you know, do those look like servers to you? Not really, right? So again, you know, it's the same kind of standards work applied there as well and allow us to make good use of them as well, right? So it's all over. It's not as if like, you know, sometimes folks have this very simple-minded view of like, well, you know, like this is an interesting niche, but like, why are you doing that? But what I've found in my line of work is that there's no definition of like, no concept of something being useless. You just have to have this gut feeling like, no, you know what? I'm driven to go look into this area. and you don't yet know when it will matter, but like I'm conclusively just seeing that like in half a year, it'll be like the most important thing I would have ever done. And so when I get these gut feelings, I just go act on them and like, yes, finally we got this other thing that's very important for us.
That's an exciting way to look at it. And it's pretty cool to be, maybe even part scary, but definitely an interesting place to be is to have this gut feeling about something that technically nobody is doing yet, but to have the vision to say there's so much potential here. And yeah, I think people are starting to see that now.
So are we recruiting for the team yet?
Oh, we are. Yeah, we are actually. There are job openings opened up. In fact, I tweeted about
Pete's referral link will be in the show notes.
I put these on LinkedIn and I put these on my Twitter like weeks ago. But you know what? Maybe I should go refresh and just put these up on our official VMware ARM blog as well, because why not? Of course, no. And by the way, going back to what William said about all these explorations, you know, we're documenting everything, right? So you go on the Fling website, you know, you will get step-by-step instructions for doing stuff. Okay, so. You know, you don't have to like sit there and be worried like, oh man, I don't know, what is FDM stuff? Like, do I need to do anything special? We've documented everything. Sure. We have step-by-step instructions for all the platforms. And again, you know, if you feel that there's a mistake someplace and, or you want better instructions, just let us know. You know, mm-hmm. we'll update it, make sure that everybody's comfortable and can do what they want to do.
And I know flings are not, the whole point behind a fling is that it's not supported and it's, you know, so there's obviously, you know, at your own risk type of thing. But William, you specifically, you've been pretty accessible to our customers, you know, for these flings and for various things. So what's the expectation here for you guys? Do you think is there going to be, you think your support game is going to be upped as people start to get wind of this?
Oh yeah, I think this is probably going to be one of the most popular flings, if not the popular fling of 2020, yeah. at least one good thing. But no, totally. I think, you know, certainly I'm going to be open to the community. You know, Andre's been very grateful in terms of sharing his knowledge on Twitter, so he's going to be accessible. We're going to have a couple of places to engage with us, right? So obviously the Fling site, we'd love for folks to leave comments if they run into problems. If you do find bugs, you know, it's not going to be bug-free. It's our first release. I'm sure some things might slip through. You can definitely file bugs on the Fling site. You can also engage with us outside of just social media. So we're also going to have a ESXi ARM Slack channel on the VMware Cloud site. The whole team's going to be fully accessible. Again, we're really excited for this. You know, there's been so much work behind the scenes. You know, really kudos to Andre and team. And so we really put all the documentation together. We can talk a little bit about kind of the different hardware platforms in a second. Love the engagement. And ultimately, it's going to be your guys' feedback, right? I think vSAN Witness was something that folks have been asking for.
Yeah.
So we spent some time kind of validating that though. But if there are other things that you'd like to see, or maybe things that may not work 100%, these are things that we like to explore. And that to me is the most exciting thing about the Fling, is that this is really driven by the customer. At this point, you know, the bits are going to be out, they're out there today, right? And so I'm really excited to see what our customers are going to be doing with it. What are the applications you're thinking of? You've been asking us for this Fling, now it's there. So really we're kind of waiting on to see what folks are doing with it. And in terms of getting started, like Andre said, we've got full documentation. We have several platforms. Maybe Andre, if you want to step us through, we kind of talked about the Pi. So that is kind of like the easiest way, you know, spending less than $100, get going. We'll have some recommendation, you know, definitely get the higher model for obvious purposes, be more run workloads. But maybe you want to talk about, you know, the what we're calling kind of near edge and even data center. So we have a couple of flavors of kind of hardware compatibility, so that, you know, if you want to do something more than just kind of a gimmick of a Pi and actually run some real ARM workloads, maybe Andre can kind of cover the other two types of scenarios. And if there is other hardware, definitely let us know as well.
Yeah, and let us know, because I'm sure John already has his browser open and he's ready to push to add something to the cart. So
yeah, sorry guys, I'm phasing out. I'm like just randomly looking for, you know, these other references and whipping out the corporate Amex for you know, hey, I'm not traveling, so maybe they won't notice, you know, a couple thousand worth of ARM servers here and there.
Yeah, and I'm not kidding. That's the funny
part. So to help our YouTube audience, while I talk, I could just briefly show the same booth slides I'm showing in the Dev Summit booth. Would that be okay, Pete?
Yeah, it'd be great. Let's do it.
So this, what I'm showing is a slide that talks about the server platform that we support. And this is based on the Ampere Computing EMAG 8180. Ampere Computing is an ARM server CPU startup with a large war chest and a bunch of ex-Intel execs. So people are actually pretty excited about it. And the EMAG is actually their last generation hardware platform. They've just launched a Neoverse N1 based Altra, which has a similar core to what you see in the AWS Amazon M6G or the Graviton2 CPUs. But today we're talking about just the Ampere EMAC based servers, and these are available from Lenovo. This is like the HR330A1U or 350, which is the 2U server.
You've got a major OEM who's picked this up, which means that means I can actually get a 4-hour support contract and all the other fun things.
That is not something I can really comment on. I couldn't tell you that.
We'll be stalking Lenovo for a follow-up interview. Don't worry.
So this is Lenovo box, but if you want to buy it, you will have to contact Ampere. Like you got to go reach out to Ampere, right? So that's kind of weird, but you can actually buy like a Y-box solution as a workstation and as a server from, there's a distributor called Avantech computer, the UK based. That'll work as well. And we're trying to see if we can line up a few other ways by which folks can leverage some Ampere EMAC systems without buying them. Although that's still in the works. So this
32 cores is nothing to sneeze at though. Like
32,
that's,
yeah.
That's some power.
Now I'll say this is a pretty boring system. And that's kind of the intention. It's just a server and it has a VMC and you can manage them remotely and it has PCI, SATA, M2 NVMe and USB, but it's a server, right? So if you're interested in this kind of a data center use case, this may be pretty good. Let us know. But now moving on to Edge. Now I'm showing this NXP-based solution. This is the beefier one of the two that we support. This one is made by an ODM called SolidRun. A few folks remember us demoing ESXi and ARM on another SolidRun platform called the SolidRun Machado Bin. That was actually based on a Marvell chip. But this one is like a pretty beefy workstation / microserver / edge compute gateway based on an NXP chip. Again, 16 cores. And this is as close as, the closest equivalent to this maybe could be the Amazon Graviton 1 servers, right? Those are also 16 cores.
Are those SFP plus ports, four of them?
So this is actually a COM Express module that is plugged into this ITX sized carrier. That's what I'm showing. And this is something that
looks like you've got 40 gig of in and out from a networking perspective. I'm assuming those are 10 gig ports. Probably.
Those are 10 gig ports. Now, just to be very open, we do not support those today, right? I mean, that's the Achilles heel whenever you have embedded IO in a CPU. Like with a server, it's bringing out an IO. Stick a Mellanox NVIDIA card in there and you're done.
Yeah.
Here, when you have integrated IO, then you need to have drivers. Now, we do have an action plan, generally speaking, around the NXP platforms. But we don't have this.
That looks like it'd be a good virtual firewall or router or load balancer or something.
If you have drivers, exactly. Like, so, who knows, maybe at some point there will be a version of the Fling or maybe it could be a product that will actually support this. That would be great. Today, you still have to use either USB networking.
For stuff that we don't have drivers, can we just do a pass-through on the raw device if there's a guest OS that has drivers?
That's a great question, by the way. In this case, because that big NIC, it's actually a packet processor. It's not a PCI device. It's a platform device. It's actually
That's
PCI
like showing
device.
Up as an FPGA or something wacky. Cool.
Passing that through into VM is not trivial. Let me put it that way. Okay. So if it was just a PCI device, then we could do that. Unfortunately, it's not. So this would actually require, more handholding in the hypervisor. Support for
passive. For those of you with business cases, go annoy our friend here on Twitter. So,
okay, business cases, by the way, for this board, I mean, this could be an awesome telco at the edge box. I mean, no brainer. It could be actually a pretty awesome, maybe like a vSAN, not just a witness, but maybe it could be a small vSAN box because it has like SATA connectivity there. It has M2, which you could do some, put it also flash in there for accelerating it. Obviously, the NICs
not just that too. There's also ECC memory, right? So that kind of goes back to the point of like this is
thanks.
This hardware looks just like x86, and you can see that these platforms are not only very capable, but they're actually ready for the enterprise workloads, and that's a lot of the work that we had talked about earlier. So the ECC part to me is quite interesting because now it means the customer can actually use this in production for some of the most mission critical stuff that you might be finding at the edge.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, we used to refuse to support anything that didn't have ECC. I know we had to get like a waiver for the Mac Mini or something. So it's interesting seeing those capabilities here.
So I'll say, folks, are probably saying this right now, and they've said in the past, like, ooh, how much is that? $800. But then, can you show me a platform today that has support for 64 gigs of ECC that costs $800? I don't know that one. Does it also have four 10 gig ports on it? I mean, if so, I will like eat my shoe.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah,
maybe literally, because I mean, we have the super micro boxes, right? ECC okay. memory, you know, when you talk about these configuration, it's well over north of $1,000 without all the extra componentries and all that, right? So to be able to get ECC memory in this type of a form factor, and then obviously tailoring to these types of workloads. So yeah, I mean, the cost, it's night and day. And then I think the type of workloads you'll be able to run on here. So I think it's just quite interesting to see this level of capability for these early on systems. Like I said, this is still early on stuff. That's just now. I think there's still so much happening in the industry in this space.
And actually this company, SolidRun, they're working with an AI chip company, Gyrofalcon, or I hope I'm not butchering that. But they've actually created this like AI acceleration server where they combine one of these things as a control plane. And then they have like, I think, four nodes that are hooked up to this. This is all inside a one you box, by the way, that has these like Gyrofalcon AI accelerators. And it's a pretty expensive box, as you can imagine. But nevertheless, like they're claiming some fairly incredulous performance gains. So, hey, you know, this could be this is a building block of some pretty interesting things. People are using this as a workstation, like an ARM-based workstation. So it could be a good home lab box. Okay, I think we've exhausted this particular platform. On the smaller end side, this is NXP's Raspberry Pi, effectively, with a twist. Again, here I'm showing the box has four network ports, which we don't support today. Again, sorry, but you know, drivers need to be developed.
Yeah, sure.
But it's in the same ballpark as the Raspberry Pi in terms of like the kinds of CPUs it has. And how much RAM? It has 4 gigs of RAM, although it's 4 gigs of ECC RAM in the Raspberry Pi, not ACC. One of the things I'm demoing in general is that showing that you can do there's an M2 Wi-Fi adapter, PCI Wi-Fi, and yeah, you know, put it in the VM, and yes, it works. Now, I wouldn't really want to do PCI pass through, in a VM on a device with 4 gigs of RAM, but it's possible. So this is called a freeway platform from NXP. It is kind of their dev kit, but it's available from them and it doesn't cost an arm and a leg. It is more expensive.
Arm and a leg. I see what you did there.
And actually, you know, again, I apologize to folks on the audio side of this, but here's my little four-way. And you've got this like janky setup here where I have an Intel E1000 NIC, you know, plugged into this thing using a ribbon cable that gets turned into M2. So that's how part of the way I was testing some of this stuff. So it's another platform. Again, you know, why would you be looking at this? Well, because maybe you're taking a look at NXP, you care about, you like where the chips are giving you. Maybe you want to come back to talk to us, say, like, you know, why don't we talk about an actual NXP, like layerscape based solution for telco, for our industrial edge. But by the way, can you please make the network ports work? Because, well, that's kind of where the value prop of the chip is.
The other thing that you mentioned too, is that because it's 4 gigabytes of ECC and the footprint of it, you know, it's also use case driven, right? 4 gigs may not sound a whole lot when you think about traditional virtual machines, but you think about, you know, edge and IoT, the types of workloads are very different, right?
It could be
a sensor. We've seen devices as small as like an Intel NUC running on ships, on submarines. I actually just saw a video the other day talked about the NUC history where they're actually running these devices in space. So you can imagine for very specific types of use cases where reliability, you know, you can take advantage of like FT, for example, right? In this very small footprint. So costing, power, cooling, and maybe you have lots of these sensors. So maybe tens of thousands of sensors, you know, for telco scenarios, right? This might actually be the perfect platform or something similar to that nature that can involve in that space. So again, what you're seeing here is some evolution of these different hardware platforms. And we have kind of options depending on what your scenario is, you know, from high-end data center to something as simple as a Raspberry Pi. And I think that's really what's exciting about this space is that it's also very new. The ecosystem is being developed and we're also seeing this transpire towards the public cloud vendors. We've seen AWS launched their, ARM solutions. I think Oracle actually just announced a couple of weeks ago, you know, they're looking into providing ARM instances. So I think this space is definitely ripe for innovation. And I think this is where we're really interested. And I think a lot of feedback from our customers will not only drive the partners to explore these scenarios, but we might even be able to solve some problems that customers have today that's really difficult to solve with traditional x86, whether you're talking about pricing, cooling, or power, for example.
Well, and the environmental stuff gets really wacky because I've got this game I get to play where I'll have an SE or some architect come to me like, hey, I need a vSAN ready node. I'm like, okay, yeah, we got lots of those. They're like, well, I need one that'll operate under this many Gs. I'm like, okay. And then they're like, and it needs to be at this atmosphere. And at this point I'm playing, is this a cruise missile? Is this a satellite? Or wait, it's at zero. It's at one atmosphere. It's at ground zero. It's moving that fast. Okay. Is this a plane or a cruise missile or a bullet train? Because there's only three things that hit those requirements. And you know, it gets kind of,
I can let you know, but I'll have to kill you for that. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and what's crazy is like, there may be an x86 platform that does this, but it hasn't, like it only gets updated every 6 years. Like those are viewed as historic, like the, you know, the x86, they only go down market so much into some of those extreme environmental boxes that are rated for this. And, a, you know, and like, oh, and we need the box to survive a crash at 240 kilometers an hour. And it's like, wait, what? Wait, is this a maglev? Like, what are y'all doing? So
yeah, and there's a lot of work happening in like being economically responsible in terms of where the hardware is being produced and just how much power consumption as well. So trying to be more green in terms of where these devices are and kind of replacing systems that would be much more hungry or areas where you may not have a lot of power connectivity. You know, Andre mentioned kind of the Wi-Fi chip, you know, this opens up the door for certain types of management where, you know, you may not have physical LAN connectivity, but Wi-Fi is certainly a easier way to kind of product connectivity. And, you know, maybe in the future, we'll start to see 5G and other types of like connectivity.
Mesh nodes too. Like, I mean, just take pipelines here with oil, gas. I live here in Houston. You talk to these guys and it used to be, you just ran a pipeline. And if there was a problem, you'd find out, you know, from your pressure monitoring at either end of the pipeline. And now the environmental mandates are like, look, we better have pressure monitoring every so many feet, and we need to be able to process that data. We need to be able to act independently. We need some machine learning, some remote AI. We need cameras and sensors that are processing data.
So John, like just the pipeline. This is actually like, you know, so I just moved back to Chicago. Well, not just, but fairly recently, but I used to live right near Boston, and I used to live in North Andover. And if you remember like a year ago or something, I think that was about a year ago, that was like a major gas pipeline explosion in Andover, right? Where like houses getting, basically it's going on fire. Specifically,
oh yeah, the whole neighborhood popped. Yeah, that's kind of terrifying. So we're trying to do a better job of safety in those situations. And part of that is there real, you know, people may say, you know, if it's a regular server and you're like, hey, you're gonna have to spend another $500 per server. You're like, okay, whatever. That's not a big deal. When you start talking about deployments where people need to deploy 80,000 nodes to hit the level of safety and monitoring and shave one more nines off this thing that might kill people, that $400 or $500 really starts to add up.
And I'll add that, you know, some of our folks in the audience might ask, well, they Google this and like, well, it's like $500. That sounds like a lot. But consider that what this freeway platform is for is just a basic evaluation of the tech. You're like, you're not going to be using this. You're going to go back to NXP. You're going to find some ODM that works with them, right? And like, you would be designing a solution that works for you, right? And by the way, this chip isn't limited to 4 gigs of RAM. So like, yeah, you can do 16 gig of RAM if you need it, right? It's not about that. And I really just want to highlight, you know, that NXP has been an amazing partner. You know, both of these systems, both the beefier 16 core one, the Honeycomb, and this one, they are undergoing that system ready ES certification. And while the Honeycomb initially, that was a requirement from the OEM, the Solidron, like they knew that they wanted a SHE certification and they were first aiming for like service certification, right? On the smaller board, you know, we've gone from zero to nothing with NXP funding and developing the UEFI and ECPI firmware. So it's been an exciting journey.
Yeah, this is definitely out of the box thinking for, you know, who cares about the form factor? You know, you're getting your hands on the chip. You're validating that this new use case can actually work. So this, yeah, and a totally different use case than what most folks are used to. So this is exciting.
And now we see that the most exciting thing, probably the most approachable, you know, high volume platform that we're launching with a Fling, of course, is the Raspberry Pi 4. And again, we've talked so much on the show already about it, but yep, you can use 4 gigs. You know, we're not telling you can. Probably the 8 gig is a bit more useful. And while the benefits of fault tolerance on a device that small may be dubious, you can do it. We have shown that fault tolerance vMotion works. So, and I'm actually really excited about William's experiments with Witness. I mean,
yeah.
Wow.
William, have you done a video on that yet?
I plan on doing some stuff. I shot a couple of videos for some of the vMotion and the install and stuff. Again, this is like just literally like off the cutting board. And so, yeah, we'll definitely do some more videos. I think Andre's going to start, him and the team is going to start doing some blogs. And I think we're definitely going to start to show you a bunch of other stuff that can be done on it. So definitely follow the Twitter account, the ARM blog. You know, all the news will start to get posted and shared on there.
Yeah, keep me posted on that. I want to get involved. I want to see this witness on a Raspberry Pi really bad.
Yeah, I'm currently alt-tabbed trying to sort out the logistics of how to open a ticket with our poor R&D data center guys of how to rack 100 Raspberry Pi 4s.
Sweet, good stuff.
They're going to hate me.
Man, all right, yeah. Well, that is very cool. I that's exciting news, and I know this, William. You're going to get pretty busy within the. You guys are definitely going to probably be getting a lot of Twitter and DM and Slack activity on this. But I'll try not to bother you too much. But I am excited about this. I want to see more, and I want to see how this progresses. And
just so we're kind of clear. Of course, you know, we recognize it's a fling, right? So it's sort of best effort, right? But we also recognize that. No, we don't want like people to be unhappy to have like some horrible crippling bug out there, right? So do let us know, and you know, we'll do our best. You know, we'll go and take a look, and you know, I fully anticipate that, you know, for crippling problems, you know, yeah, we will be updating the Fling bits. You know, it will still be pinned to that same version. So I'm not talking about like a new version of Fling. I'm just saying updating the same bits in place, you know, with fixes as they're necessary. But of course, you know, the team's very busy with Project Monterey. That actually one of the amazing golden eggs that the ARM work has created for us.
Yeah, that's beautiful. Yeah, all right. Well, listen, I'm going to leave links to all of the announcements today and this past week, the Project Monterey stuff as well as all the content that I can get my hands on from you, William, and Andre. So, man, this is good. I appreciate you guys coming on with us. And, yeah, I look forward to seeing where this goes. This is an exciting new chapter in this fling. It's pretty cool.
Yep, it's finally out the door. So super excited to see what the community does with it and all that. So
for sure, yeah. John, anything else before we let these gents go?
No. I've got a lot of questionable ARM expenses to go try to shove through Concur. So,
all right, well, that music tells me it's time to go. And so if you want to get in touch with us, send us an email at podcast@vmware.com. You can subscribe to us on your podcast app of choice by searching Virtually Speaking Podcast. You can catch this and all episodes at vspeakingpodcast.com. A big thanks to Andre and William for giving us all the ESXi and ARM news. We're back next week, but until then, bye for now.
Enough of this jibber jabber.